Hello and welcome back to another episode of Blush. I'm your host, Hiva, and I don't know. I have no idea where that was going. I think I really need to work on the vocal intonation with my intro because the way that I say it, the vocal emphasis, the tones, it sets it up as though I have something to say after saying my name, and I don't. I have nothing to say. Okay, this should be a great episode. I mean, it's off to a fantastic start. I do have something fun though for today. We are doing a full Q&A episode with some of your questions. They're so fantastic. And per usual with a Q&A episode, I noticed such a theme, a lot of people asking similar types of questions. So there were two questions in particular, which I got like four different versions of for each of the two. So that should be really fun for everyone. And honestly, even the questions that are not, you know, identical to each other, there is a very common through line with all of these questions. And I think there's kind of a moral to the story that we'll notice by the end, which is essentially everything comes back to trauma. Everything comes back to inner child work. Oh my God, just forgot how to talk. Everything comes back to trauma. Everything comes back to inner child work. All of the things, all of the negative things that we experience in our day-to-day lives usually are symptoms of unresolved trauma, and the remedy, the healing for it, the way to make all of these things go away usually is trauma reprocessing work. So should we just get right into it, or is there anything I need to dilly-dally on? Okay, the only thing I want to touch on is that the Vanderpump Rules reunion has begun. So last week we saw part one of the reunion. The week before that we saw the finale that had all the new footage from March when the cameras went back up. I don't have much to say other than the fact that I'm low-key obsessed with Lala. You might not know this about me, but I am obsessed with Lala. I think she's the most fun person to watch on reality TV. I think she has great takes, and I think she's actually a really kind and really good person deep down. Ariana Slade, I mean, that dress, iconic. One thing I will say though, I'm fascinated by this. For the reunion, they sit down. They film sitting down. Now, if you have not seen Ariana's reunion dress, it is a red dress. It's long sleeves with kind of a high collar, and then it has a few cutouts. So basically, there's a strip along the chest, and then there's a strip on the waist, and then there's a cutout below the belly button, and then the long skirt, right? I mean, everyone's calling it a revenge dress. It's giving Princess Diana showing up to, was it a funeral that she showed up to in her revenge dress? I really think it was a funeral. I don't know. I was a child, not to brag. And anyway, all I have to say, iconic dress. She pulled it off. She looked so good. I mean, she's always had the sickest abs. And I'm sure after all that shit went down, she probably couldn't eat for a while. And she was just looking really, really snatched. But this is what blew my mind. She wore that dress sitting down for like 10 hours. Hours or some shit. I mean 1 minute or 10 hours, whatever. The fact that she wore that dress to sit down, a cutout below the belly button. I mean, you would have to be insanely confident in your body to wear something that is cut out in the lower belly region. I would sooner show my labia. Like, let's pull out a fucking flap, guys. before I show the below the belly button region of my stomach and sitting down. And for a long time, it's not like it was 90 seconds and she could just suck it in. I don't know. I have terrible sitting posture though. It's not a strong suit of mine. So yeah, that's kind of all my thoughts on the reunion. Also, Ariana was on Call Her Daddy, which was really enjoyable. I mean, not a ton of, you know, groundbreaking information if you've been following Scandoval closely. But one thing I really did enjoy about it is I feel like Ariana has always been kind of a cool girl. She's always had this thing where she's like, oh, I'm not that emotional. I'm not that needy. I'm just, you know, I'm not like other girls. I'm a cool girl. I'm a chill girl. She's always kind of had that air to her, which I found so off-putting as someone who's also always tried to present themselves in that way. I mean, you know, the devil, you know, but I've always found it so off-putting, and you could really tell in the Call Her Daddy interview that she had done a lot of therapy and done a lot of inner work, because in my opinion, she showed up but with a very different energy, and it almost felt like she kind of owned the fact that she used to do that and that that's not actually super authentic. I don't know. I mean, she didn't say it in so many words. Like, I blab about it every week on this podcast, but it felt like a different energy to me, and I thought it was really cool, and it was just such an confirmation of how attractive true authenticity is, even if you're being authentic about a trait that you might deem as not being the most likable trait. But just the fact that you're owning it and showing up and just saying, this is who I am. Yeah, I might be a little needy. Yeah, I might be a little emotional. Yeah, I understand it might be cooler to not have these traits, but I have them because I'm a fucking human being and let's fucking go. I don't know. There's just nothing quite as hot as that. Okay, I think I'm good on reunion talk. Let's just dive in because we're going to do all of your questions. I'm sorry. If you're watching this on video, I think you understand why I'm laughing. If you're listening on audio, you might be confused. I'm flailing my arms in the air like, you know those car dealerships? You know the inflatable things outside the car dealerships? That's kind of how I'm behaving. I'm not entirely sure why. Maybe it's because I don't know. I'm wearing a strapless top, so my arms feel really free. Maybe it's because 2 weeks ago, I finally went and got my armpits waxed, although the hair is kind of back. But relative to the full bush I was running down there before, it was truly Tasmania down there. And if you don't know that reference, you're probably not from Australia. Tasmania is an island off the southeastern. Am I pronouncing that weird? Southeastern? Southwestern, right? So southeastern. Or is there a different way that you say that? Okay, fully losing it. Coast of Australia, and it is largely bush. Okay, should we get into the questions? Question number one. I have a long history of trying to convince myself that I like someone way more than I actually do. How do I stop? Okay, first of all, I also have a long history of doing this. Quite literally, I've done this more times than I can count. In fact, I have done one of two things historically. Either tried to convince myself that I like someone way more than I actually do, or been really into someone and tried to play it really fucking cool. But I've really had very little in between. So here's the thing. When you try to convince yourself that you like someone more than you actually do, what's really happening is it's a manifestation of the anxiety within the attachment spectrum. So being high on the anxiety spectrum, whether that's anxious attachment or fearful avoidance, both situations, you're high on the anxiety spectrum, it creates this preoccupation with romance. It creates this real intense desire to be in partnership. And so if you're trying to convince yourself that you're actually into someone that you're not really that into, what's happening is you're kind of in scarcity mindset. Your brain is going off. By the way, if you're watching this on video, you might notice that my left eye is twitching. I've had this left eye twitch situation going on this past week. It is quite literally driving me insane. And I understand that eye twitching generally comes from lack of sleep and stress and high caffeine intake. I do not consume caffeine. My sleep, I mean, could I be sleeping a bit more? Sure. I mean, I got over 8 hours last night. I think in the past couple of weeks, I've maybe been more in the 7 hour range, but that's not a crisis. I used to sleep fucking like 3 to 5 hours, if that, per night and be fine and not have my eye twitch. And I mean, have I been working really hard? Yes, but not to the level of eye twitching. So I don't know. I'm doing a lot of stress reduction modalities right now. I'm taking ashwagandha. I'm taking some other adaptogenic herbs to help condition my body's stress response. I am doing a lot of humming and singing to tone the vagus nerve. And what else? I'm doing doubling down on breath work, healthy eating, meditation, all the things, you name it. Anyway, let's get back to this person's question, because you probably didn't even notice my eye twitch. But this full intermission that we had to take. If you have questions about that, by the way, about how I'm kind of dealing with trying to improve my body's stress response, let me know and I can get into that more on next week's episode. Anyway, I don't remember exactly where I was on this, but preoccupation. So basically, if you're trying to convince yourself that you're into someone, what's really happening most likely is that you're kind of in scarcity mindset and your brain is like, okay, this person seems great. This person seems good enough. So let's just fucking go. Let's just make it happen, because there's part of you that is worried that you're not going to meet anyone as good as this person. Right. The other way that this can happen, and I do think these are closely related, is there's a lot of rhetoric out there, especially in attachment theory, especially for anxious attachment, that you are supposed to date someone that you're not actually into, essentially, is what people say. Right. There's this notion, if you're anxiously attached, if you have this instant connection with someone, that means it's a trauma bond and that they're avoidant and it's going to be really toxic. And instead, you should go for the person that you're kind of sleeping on right now, because the anxious attachment makes you not attracted to secure people. And there's some element of truth to this. I'm not going to go down a really intense rabbit hole, but I think that it's actually really unhelpful advice. And I think that it can create a lot of problems. And I know for me it did. And the most notable example of this from my life is when I was dating the German, I remember thinking, he seems like a nice guy. He seems like the type of guy I should be into. He seems really emotionally available. He seems really secure. He's really fucking into me. I mean, he's like really just kind of obsessed with me. And this is the type of guy that I should go for, right? And even though he kind of gave me the ick, I was like, well, maybe it's because he's so secure and I'm anxious. And so I just need to push past it. And I kept seeing him and I kept seeing him and I kept seeing him. And I was really trying to convince myself that I was into him. And then of course, when he ghosted me after we had sex, then I went full on crazy and was borderline stalking him. Even though I kind of hated him right up until then. And that is a good illustration of being fucking crazy. No, I mean, anxious attachment, fearful avoidance, yada, yada. But here's the thing. So it could be something like, oh, he's so good on paper and I should convince myself to like this type of person. But I actually think even if that's the case, it still goes back to the first thing I was just saying, which is ultimately this fear of not finding anyone else. It's a scarcity mindset thing, and that's what's going on. So how do you stop? You have to get out of that scarcity mindset. You really have to convince yourself that there are other people. You're going to meet someone better. And ultimately, what you're really going to need to do is actually get so okay with yourself that you kind of get to a point where you're like, you know what? Even if I don't ever meet anyone better than this, I don't want to be with this person either, because I don't actually like this person. So I'd rather be alone than force myself to be into this person. And how do you get there? Well, you have to do the trauma reprocessing on what is causing the attachment wounds to begin with, which if you're in this kind of type of place, you probably had a childhood where in some way your authentic need for independence was not properly cultivated. And so you kind of received the message that love means constant connection, love means being with other people, love means sacrificing yourself for other people. And that's ultimately what this is all boiling down into. Now, I do want to give one quick caveat before we move on to the next question. And I just want to say that I'm not saying that the instant that you're not into someone or you kind of get the ick, you should write them off, because this can go fully in the other direction also. And there are a lot of people who do cut people off way too quickly. And sometimes the ick isn't your intuition. It's actually just bringing up other types of unprocessed trauma and things like that. So do give it a few dates. But if you've given it a few dates and you're still feeling, and you catch yourself trying to think things like, oh, but he's so great. Oh, but she's so pretty. And she said the nicest things. And he seems so into me. And he has this great job. And you're really trying to convince yourself. And you know that you have a history of doing this again. I really genuinely, wholeheartedly believe that what's underlying this is just an intense desire to be with someone and trying to find, you know, having that perfectionist tendency of just trying to find someone who is hitting all the things, is checking all the boxes, but it's not actually your person. And I think you deserve to be with someone who you feel really excited and really happy about and who doesn't make you want, you know, your genitalia to invert inside of themselves. So yeah, that's just my two cents. I mean, lame answer per usual, but do the inner work, which is pretty much going to be my answer to every single question here. Okay, moving on to question number two. What are some ways to healthily leave a toxic friendship? Okay. Number one, I'd be very curious to know why this friendship is toxic, because the answer really will depend on what's actually happening. It's funny, I have spent the past 15 years of my life with my phone on silent, and then all of a sudden something has happened, not 15 years, that's a lie, but 10 years for sure, and something has happened lately where I have the sound on my phone a lot of the time. And it's actually really because I've missed so many delivery people and I'm always waiting on packages. So that's why I have the sound on my phone. But it is not very professional that I don't turn it off before we start recording. Okay. So the answer really will depend on why this friendship is toxic. But ultimately, what's healthy for you really depends on where you are at this moment in time. So if all that you are capable of doing is ghosting someone, and even that is really hard work for you, then do it. That's going to be healthy for you, because ultimately, I don't know why this friendship is toxic. I have no idea, but I'm going to take your word on the fact that the friendship is toxic. And if the friendship is actually toxic, then not being in it will always be healthier than being in it. And if that means that you have to ghost this person to not be in it, so be it. I'm not saying it's ideal. I'm not saying it's the greatest thing. I'm not saying it's kind to the other person. But if that's all that you're capable of, then that's what you need to do. Now, if you are capable of doing more, then you should do more. Ideally, the most ideal, healthy, perfect approach to this, I guess, is having a conversation with a person, explaining to them why you choose to not be their friend anymore, which I'm laughing because that is a very awkward thing to do. It's very awkward. We don't do it because it's so incredibly awkward, but that would be the most healthy way, right? And you could even acknowledge like, hey, this is an incredibly uncomfortable conversation and we're both going to feel like absolute dog shit about about it, but I need to take a step back from a friendship, and I'm telling you this so you're not left wondering what the fuck happened and why I'm not talking to you anymore. But ultimately, this friendship is really harmful to me and my well-being at this point in time. You could give the reasons, you could not give the reasons, whatever. You could send this as a text. But ultimately, if you need to leave the friendship, you need to leave the friendship, right? And I think a really good kind of example of this might be, let's say you have realized that your relationship with alcohol is problematic and you want to stop drinking, or you want to cut down on your drinking or whatever. And you have a close friend who is your drinking buddy. You guys always drink together. And even if you set an intention to hang out with this person and not drink, you end up drinking. And you know that it's important for you in your life right now to take a step back from drinking. That would be an example of a friendship that's toxic at this moment in time. And let's say you just really, where you're at right now, don't have it in you. You just can't seem to muster the strength and the courage, because it is really courageous and it is really fucking hard to have that type of open communication with someone. If all that you're capable of doing is ghosting, listen, it's going to be really fucking hurtful to them. It really is. But that's better than you continuing to stay in this dynamic where you're actually harming yourself over and over and over again. So I'm not saying to ghost them. I'm just saying if that's literally all that you're capable of, then that's fine. But if you are capable of having some kind of conversation, that would be the ideal thing. And listen, it's going to be uncomfortable no matter what. I remember a few years ago, I had just joined this, it's a manifestation program platform. You guys have, longtime listeners will recognize me. It's called To Be Magnetic. Recognize me talking about it. And there were Facebook groups for the program, and there was a New York City Facebook group. And when I first joined, I remember hosting this moon circle at my apartment for a bunch of strangers. I must have some kind of death wish, truly. Like, maybe I was low-key hoping to be abducted and die, but I just open my home to a bunch of fucking strangers coming into it. And it was really fun, whatever. And then when it ended, there was this woman who messaged me, and she was kind of, her energy was a little hysterical and it was a little off-putting to me, where she's like, I really want to be notified the next time things like this happen. And I was like, cool, well, I posted about it and I guess you didn't see. I mean, I don't, like, what did you expect me to message every single person individually, you know? But I was like, yeah, sure, totally. You want to go get coffee? Because I was just such a people pleaser at the time. And even though I was off put by her energy, I just wanted her to feel included, because my intention was never, I didn't exclude anyone. I posted about it in the group. The people who saw and could come came, you know? Anyway, so I was like, you want to go get coffee? Because I just really wanted to make sure that she felt included in every way. And we met up for a coffee at some point and talked, and she seemed nice and interesting and whatever. Again, I was a little put off by some of her energy, but she seemed nice, and you know, and I needed friends too, and I try to be a compassionate and accepting person, and as someone who has felt left out a lot of my life, I really try to never make anyone else feel left out. And so I continued hanging out with her, even though she always kind of gave me the ick a little bit. And finally, at some point, this is months into, you know, we'd meet up here and there, whatever. One time, well, something happened with her in her personal life that I'm not going to get into. But basically, this incident that happened kind of opened my eyes to the fact that she's not exactly this pious person that she's putting out. I mean, she presented herself as someone who channels messages from spirit and has this business where she was charging, in my opinion, way too much money for one-on-one sessions with people. And when this incident happened, it was something in her marriage that happened where I was like, wow, she's doing something that I'm very, very morally opposed to. Essentially, it was cheating adjacent. And it kind of set off this light bulb that maybe she's not who she's saying she is. And it just, my ick got even stronger. And I just, it got to the point where I physically could not stomach talking to her or being around her. And I kind of just was pulling away a little bit without really addressing it. But also it wasn't like we were hanging out and talking every single day. So it wasn't this huge thing either. And it's not like I ghosted her or was not responding to her at all, but I kind of was pulling away a little bit. And she asked me about it. And so, oh, and also she kind of just could be kind of mean to other people, or the way she would talk about other people was really, really mean sometimes. And so she asked me about it, and I sent her this voice memo, and it is quite literally the most awkward, shaky thing. I didn't bring up the thing in her marriage, but I did bring up how she could sometimes be really mean towards other people, and just generally her energy made me a little uncomfortable. I don't remember exactly what I said. I probably still have it saved in my phone, because I didn't just send a voice memo right in the text message app or whatever, or WhatsApp or whatever you use. By the way, WhatsApp is by far the most superior elite voice messaging app out there. If you're someone who likes to send voice memos back and forth instead of writing like I do, because a bitch is barely literate, emphatically recommend using WhatsApp. A, it's easier. Well, it's not that much easier when you're recording, because I think on all of the apps you can toggle it so you don't have to hold down the entire time. But for the recipient, it's so much better because A, you can listen to the voice memo without actually being in the app. So you can play the voice memo and then go off and do other things on your phone. B, you can speed it up and slow it down. And C, you can pause and resume it. It is the elite voice messaging app. Any friendships that I have where we send a lot of voice memos back and forth, I always do it in WhatsApp. And I think you should do the same. Okay, moving right along. iMessage is the worst, the fucking worst, because if you're not right on there, like if your screen locks or something, then you have to go back and listen to it from the very fucking beginning. Do you know how fucking annoying that shit is? And you just have to be on top of it. You can't pause it and it's the worst. It is by far the worst. Instagram messages is my second favorite, but you can only do it up to a minute, and you do have to play the messages within the app, and you can't speed it up and slow it down. WhatsApp, by far the best. Anyway, I didn't record it right in messages. I recorded it as a voice memo first because I was so nervous about it, and I think I wanted to re-listen to it, and I just wanted to be able to re-record it and things like that. Nevertheless, I did a shit job at it, and I do feel really bad because she got a very awkward message from me. But where was I going with this? Yeah, just that it is really kind of uncomfortable, a very uncomfortable thing to do. And we don't live in a society that is normalized doing these things at all. And I mean, yeah, essentially you kind of treat it like a breakup, right? And I think just leading with the heart and leading with love and sharing what you kind of have to share without, you don't really need to go into every fucking detail, right? Like I probably didn't need to tell this lady that she's always given me the ick and I've always low-key hated her and I just hung out with her because I'm a people pleaser. That's not a very nice thing to say to a person. Hopefully she doesn't listen to the show, and I can't imagine that she does. But you know, sharing just where you stand and how you're in this process, and that this friendship right now just isn't aligned with where you're at. But another thing to look into also is the friendship actually toxic? Or are you perceiving it as toxic for some other reason? And I don't know what that other reason could be. Maybe this friend is embodying a trait that you are in denial of in yourself, and therefore you are extra triggered by it, something like that. Maybe this friend reminds you of someone from your childhood who is a very heavy memory for you. I don't know. It could point to some kind of unresolved trauma within yourself. So I would really ask yourself, is this actually a toxic dynamic, or is it triggering something from my past that I'm in denial about, that I'm suppressing, that I don't want to face? Just something to ask yourself. So sorry if you heard the toilet flush. For whatever fucking reason, my partner has chosen to use the toilet that is right next to where I'm recording. So that's lovely of him. Thank you so much. And honestly, that might be the closest we ever get to having Ozzy on the podcast. Although I don't think so. I really think it's possible to get him on one day. We'll see. Okay, moving right along. Question number 3. I got a million different questions about the sauna blanket, so I'm just going to address them here all at once. Questions about the benefits that I've noticed, whether I like it, how much it costs, how often I do it, what brand I use. So I'm just going to address it here all at once. Now, I'm not going to talk about the scientifically proven or, you know, scientifically studied, double-blind studied benefits of sauna blankets. I'm not going to get into all that shit because you know how to Google, and I've talked about it in the past. I think I'm just going to tell you why I like the sauna blanket. And yes, I love it. I use it every single day. Generally, it's very rare that I miss a day, and I usually do it for more than an hour. But the reason I do it for more than an hour is that I've kind of habit stacked now. And so when I get in, I first thing will do one of the guided meditations from the Blush Academy when I'm in there. And then right after that, I'm doing this Mel Robbins program right now. It's the 6-month coaching group program, and the first 6 weeks there's a daily lesson and journal entry and stuff. So I do my Mel Robbins stuff while I'm in there. I'll do all of my social media while I'm in the sauna blanket. That's why if you see me on Instagram stories or TikToks and stuff, a lot of the time I'm in my sauna blanket. It's just kind of where I get it done. I do some reading in there. I do a lot of work that can be done on my phone while I'm in the sauna blanket. So that's why I'm in it all the time. That's why I'm in it for over an hour. I just have a lot of stuff to get done, and I find that it's an effective way to get it done. The benefits that I've noticed, one, my skin. It's a huge game changer for my skin. I feel like I glow a lot more. I'm a lot clearer. I just have a kind of brightness to my skin that I didn't have before I started using it. I generally speaking feel better. I feel a little more relaxed. I feel accomplished after I use it. It's the same kind of feeling that I feel after a really good workout, you know, when like you might not love it during, but afterwards you're like, ooh, yeah, that felt really fucking good. It's a similar feeling to that. And then I really feel like my body looks really snatched when I'm consistent with it, if I'm being really fucking honest. And I don't know if it's just losing a bit of water weight that causes it. I don't know if it helps stagnant lymph move out, flush out of your system. I don't think there are any studies on it, but I actually just intuitively feel like that could be the case. And then, you know, it does raise your heart rate. It really does when you're in it for a bit. So I actually do think that it's kind of the equivalent to doing a bit of cardiovascular activity. I mean, that's what it feels like to me. I feel the same benefits as having done cardiovascular activity. The only difference is I get to just lay there and get other shit done at the same time. So yeah, I mean, I notice I might take before and after pictures one day, but there is a very clear difference in kind of my belly and how defined my abs are before and after the sauna blanket every day. So yeah, those are, and then just consistently, there have been times where I didn't do the sauna blanket for a while, and then I got back into it, and within a couple of days, my body looked completely different. So that's why I kind of think that it really might be helpful for lymphatic drainage. I honestly am not sure, but this is just what I've seen. Okay, price and brand. I'll be honest with you guys. So I bought my sauna blanket a few years ago, and I bought it from a brand that was very reputable, that has infrared sauna locations throughout the city. And I bought it from them for around $600, I want to say. And even though I really, really love the sauna blanket, there are some drawbacks to it. Number one, with that brand sauna blanket, you have to wear clothes inside the sauna blanket. So I would have these clothes that would get stinky because I'm sweating in them. And then a few years ago, they came out with this towel liner. So I bought those and I used those. So now I get in naked and I get in with a towel liner. But it's still, there are some issues with it, and my lining is kind of fucked up and coming apart, and there are parts of it that really burn me. And so there's this other brand, Bond Charge, that I'm obsessed with. They make a lot of biohacking tools. They make these blue light blocking glasses that are some of the only blue light blocking glasses on the market that are actually scientifically proven to be really effective. And I use their sleep mask every night. It blocks out all light to the point where you could have your eyes wide. If it's situated correctly, you can have your eyes wide open within the sleep mask, because it's also, there's zero pressure. They're more like goggles kind of. It's hard to explain, but really soft. It's a soft, cushy fabric, but you could fully open your eyes. I actually did this last night. So Ozzy and I have been reading in bed. We're that type of couple now. And we have these really chic red light reading lamps that clip right onto the book. And so I finished reading and wanted to go to sleep before him. So I put on my sleeping mask and I had my eyes wide open, and he had his reading light on right next to me. And with my eyes wide open inside of the sleeping mask, I still couldn't see any light at all. So they're really, really sick sleep masks. They make a bunch of products, ice rollers, you name it, just biohacking kind of tools, red light devices, heat devices. And they have a sauna blanket that I really, really want. I really want to upgrade my sauna blanket to theirs. Theirs is the one that I recommend everyone buy. I actually just recommended my sister-in-law buy their brand, and she got it, and it came really quickly. The thing with the brand that I bought also is, I don't know what the deal is, but when you order products from them, it takes like 3 months to arrive, which is fucking weird. I don't know. Anyway, but this other brand, it came right away. You can get in it naked. You have way more control over temperature. And they're actually scientifically shown to have the lowest PEMFs, which is, you know, non-native EMFs, harmful EMFs, of any brand out there. And I just really love and respect the brand, and the cleanup is a lot easier, things like that. So that's the brand that I recommend, Bond Charge, BondCharge. And I worked out a code for you guys. So their blanket is a bit more expensive, but I think it's so much better. And if you use the code HIWA, HIWA, I think you get 15% off. So if you're looking to get a sauna blanket, that's the brand that I would recommend. Truthfully, they are a bit pricey, but mine is more than paid for itself. And I can't wait to upgrade mine to their brand. Okay, that's that on the sauna blanket. Moving right along to the next question.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
Listening to your most recent episode, I realized just how jaded I am about dating, but I'm not sure what to do about it. I guess my question is, how do you become unjaded? Okay, there's really two steps to this, and they're both a lot more loaded than they're going to sound. Step one is figure out the root, and step two, do trauma reprocessing work on it. So for step one, you have to figure out why you're jaded, and there's probably more than one reason. My guess is probably it's witnessing certain relationships growing up. Were your parents not very happy together? Did they fight? Did they not? Even if they seemed fine, did they have the type of relationship that you liked, that you would want for yourself? Because if the answer is no to that, that's something that could then imprint this idea that, it could be relationships that you've experienced. But ultimately, what's beneath being jaded, and I believe I talked about this last week, is actually anxious attachment. So it's those attachment wounds that you need to get to the root of, and then do trauma reprocessing work on it. And I know I say this a lot, so I just want to go back. I know I've talked about it in the past, but I just want to kind of explain again what I mean by trauma reprocessing work. It could look like inner child therapy. It could look like somatic therapy. It could look like EMDR, whatever the modality is. Basically, what you're doing is you're taking a memory that was traumatic for you, something that even if it doesn't seem like a very big deal, right? A lot of my traumatic memories aren't that big of a deal. For example, one thing I'm working through in trauma reprocessing work right now is this memory that I have. I think I was in the third grade where I lost an art contest. Not a fucking big deal. It was an art contest in my school. I didn't win. That's it. It's not that deep. It was not that big of a deal. I mean, I wasn't, you know, essayed. I wasn't, none of my parents died. Nothing major happened to me. Nevertheless, it's something that is the root of a lot of various types of things. It's an unprocessed memory. It has some weight to me. It comes back to me. I hold on to it, and it makes me feel uncomfortable still to this day. So trauma doesn't have to be this big major thing, but nevertheless, it stays with you and it has an emotional charge that then comes up in unrelated situations. So the goal with trauma reprocessing work isn't to erase the memory, because it's always going to be there. What we're doing is we're neutralizing the emotional charge that's associated with it. So you get to a point where it's no longer affecting you. It's no longer running the show. It's no longer coming up in your day-to-day life. Personally, I really like, I mean, all of the forms of therapy that I listed, I've done and have been really helpful for me. But one thing that I really stick with is the bilateral stimulation component of EMDR. And if you're a Blush Academy member, you'll know that, because I incorporate bilateral stimulation into the guided meditations within the academy, which are really kind of hypnosis ultimately at the end of the day. And it's a way of neutralizing these memories so that they're no longer running things for you. Okay, question number five. Oh my God, now he's taking a fucking shower. I don't know if you guys can hear that shit. Good God. I mean, all I ask for him is an hour out of the fucking week. Be quiet. I'm just kidding. He's such an angel. He's such a good boyfriend. I just think it's funny to make fun of him. Okay. So question number five, this was a bunch of different questions that I got that were around the theme of how do you stop caring what other people think about you? So a lot of people asked about their families, having, you know, really conservative families, religious families, things like that. Other people were asking about unrelated people, social media comments, you name it. But I just kind of grouped it together because it's all the same shit. So the reason that we care really is there's two reasons. First is who it's coming from, and second is what the content is. So who it's coming from is loaded when it's with family, because we have been evolutionarily conditioned to care about what our family thinks about us. When we first come on this planet, we are a very helpless animal. We will not survive without our caretakers, and we know that from evolution. So we are conditioned to want our family to give a shit about us, because if they don't give a shit about us, we die. And our brains really ultimately are just trying to keep us alive. That's all that they're doing. Everything that we're doing in life is our brain trying to keep us alive. And it's its very limited way of trying to keep us alive. So we learn to want our family to care about us because that's our how our brain sees to stay alive. And we learn to be people pleasers because we want to please our parents because we want them to love us to keep us alive. Now, if you know your family doesn't approve of things that you do, they're probably not going to kill you. They're probably not going to. It's not like your mom would be like, oh, I don't like the way this baby's looking at me. I'm going to pull away the tit, you know. Just let her starve to death. That's probably not how it's going to go down, but that's how our brain experiences things. So we have evolved to care about what our family thinks about us. But here's the thing. You are now an adult. And if your family hates you, or if your family doesn't approve of shit that you do, if your family just literally is like, fuck that dumb cunt. I'm sorry. I don't know what this energy is. You'll still be alive. It'll hurt. It'll suck, but you'll still be alive. And so number one, if you're in this situation and it is your family, you really need to remind yourself that you are a full-fledged adult now, and you're staying alive on this planet, your well-being, all of these things do not depend on your parents. But the question is, do you embody being an independent adult, or do you still act like a child in some ways? Do you ask for your parents' approval on things? Do you live with your parents? Do you call them constantly? Are you, you know, asking your mom, what outfit should I wear? What guy should I date? Things like that. Or is there part of you deep down that still really wants that approval? And the answer that we know is yes, because then you're not really embodying a fully independent adult. What you're actually doing is embodying a child in some ways, and that's going to keep you stuck, and it's going to keep your brain in that modality of, okay, I really need these people to approve of everything that I do, otherwise I'll die. So that's really where that's coming from. Now, I would prescribe two things for this situation. Number one, to do a round of inner child work where you have very different parents. So maybe parents that are really progressive. I've actually done this. I pictured Lisa Bonet and, oh my God, what's his name? Zoe's dad, Kravitz, Lenny Kravitz, as my parents. And I did a full round of inner child work from the moment of conception up until now, where I would use, I actually did the To Be Magnetic inner child workshop. I think it's really, really good for this. But basically, they have these guided meditations, hypnosis tapes, whatever, for every stage of development. And I would really get in there with my eyes closed in a hypnotic kind of state. And I would visualize these very progressive, cool, kind of hipstery, just like very sex positive, very open, very, you know, accomplished mom who's out there in the world. And I, if you're watching on video, we're doing a lot of work with the arms today. I don't know if this is the effect of having a strapless shirt or what, but the arms are free. The arms are arming. Anyway. But I'd picture these very progressive kind of parents raising me at every stage through development. Now, if you're not in the To Be Magnetic thing, I did not think this episode was going to be such an advertising for To Be Magnetic. But if you're not and you don't want to sign up for them, that's fine. If you are a Blush Academy member, I don't have a full inner child workshop, but within the attachment styles workshop, I believe you will find guided meditations for three stages of childhood development, I believe. So not quite every stage, but you could use it there where you just visualize these very progressive parents who, you know, are talking openly about sex and drinking or whatever it is, your specific thing that you need to see modeled for you. You need to visualize having that experience. And when you visualize like that in a deep hypnotic state, your brain experiences it as though it actually really happened. Your brain doesn't fully know the difference. And so when your brain experiences it, you start building these new neural pathways of, I can be loved in this type of dynamic. You know, there are these people who will love me even if I have sex, even if I drink, even if I party, even if I, you know, quit my corporate job and start stripping. By open and only fans. I don't know what it is that you're trying to do that your conservative parents are holding you back from. But at the end of the day, that's step one that I would do. And that's the very first thing I would do, and really get granular and detailed and repeat each stage as much as you need until you fully have that aha moment, that it clicks for you, where you understand that you are lovable just as you are. The other thing I would do is ask yourself this question right now. What would you do differently today if you didn't care what your family thinks of you? And list out all of the things that come up and start doing those things one by one. Pick the least scary one first, or pick the scariest one first, however you, I don't know if you're a boom or a whisper kind of person. I don't know what the fuck that means. I just made it up, but you know who you are. So pick the things on that list and start doing them. But that is a secondary thing. You have to do that inner work first. You have to do the trauma reprocessing first. I know I sound like a broken record. I know I say this every fucking episode, but it's the truth. It's honest to God, the truth. Okay, now as far as the other element of this question, and this is more for the people who were asking about, you know, how do I not be so triggered by negative comments on TikTok and things like that? But it can apply to the other people too. I don't know. You'll know. Is the second element of why we get triggered by what people think of us, and that's the actual content. Now, I have a friend who says this thing. She says the blue frog principle. She says, if someone were to say to you, ugh, you're a blue frog, you wouldn't give a shit. You wouldn't be triggered. You would laugh, right? I always like to say the serial killer thing. If someone were to say to you, oh, I don't like you because you're a serial killer, you would laugh at best. I mean, you'd be really fucking confused because you're not a serial killer. You're not a blue frog. I mean, hopefully you're neither of those things. You're probably not a blue frog, but you're hopefully not a serial killer, you know? I don't know what kind of people I attract, listen, but it would be this insane insinuation because you know you're none of those things. You wouldn't be triggered. You wouldn't internalize it. You wouldn't be feeling any sort of way about it. So if it's landing for you, if someone leaves a comment, and I get insane comments on TikTok, insane comments. And when I get one that triggers me, I actually get kind of excited because it's an invitation to go inwards and do some work. I'm trying to think of one that triggered me. It's been a minute. But oh, okay. So last year, my first TikTok that kind of, I don't want to say blew up, but got more than 200 views, right? I went from 200 to all of a sudden I had one that got hundreds of thousands of views within a couple of days. And it was this huge thing. And I was getting all these followers and the podcast downloads were blowing up and stuff. And a lot of the comments, so it was this TikTok about how I used to be so triggered if I wasn't hearing from the person I was seeing constantly. Whereas I had gotten to a point where when my partner and I were apart, I wasn't, you know, just like waiting by the phone, waiting to hear from him. And there were a bunch of people who commented that were like, oh, he's not into you if you're not hearing from him every day, which is bullshit. And whatever, we're going to let that go. But there was part of me that was like, oh my God, am I being stupid? Oh my God, does he not care about me? And we had a conversation when he got back and I felt a lot better. But I remember thinking, okay, this is making me feel some kind of way. And the fact that it's making me feel some kind of way means that I need to go internal and I need to see what the root of this is, what it's bringing up. And I actually really can't remember because it was literally a year ago now. So I really can't remember what was beneath it. But once I figured that out, then I still get comments like that sometimes on TikToks that I'll make about, you know, various things relating to my relationship. And it doesn't trigger me because I'm so solid in it. I mean, I get so many negative comments. I remember one time someone commented something like, I made this TikTok about my ex being a narcissist and having a micro penis. And a lot of men were extremely triggered by that. And that probably shows you something about the size of their genitalia. Anyway, and someone commented like, oh, you're a 2 at best. Didn't trigger me. Now, if this person had said you're a 5 or a 6, that probably would have triggered me because I would have been like, oh, but am I a 5 or a 6? Like, I really thought I was a little prettier, but I don't know. But them saying you're a 2, I don't think I'm a 2. I just don't think I'm a 2. So it didn't trigger me in the least bit. Someone commented something about me being trans. I guess they were trying to tell me that I'm ugly in the most fucking homophobic, transphobic way humanly conceivable. Doesn't trigger me, you know, although I really think that person needs to be a little bit educated on gay and trans rights, but that's neither here nor there. So if something someone says to you triggers you, look internal as to what it's bringing up for you, what it's stirring up for you. Because if they said something that you knew for a fact was false, you wouldn't get defensive, right? You wouldn't be like, oh my God, no, like, no, I'm not a serial killer. You wouldn't even respond to it. It would be so insane. But if you feel the need to really defend yourself and go overboard with it, and it's just bringing up some kind of feeling in you, there's something deeper there that they're hitting on, and use it as an invitation to go inwards and do the trauma reprocessing. The theme of the episode, I told you guys. Okay, I think this is the last question. Okay. How did you know that Ozzy was the one? Okay. So here's the thing. I'm not sure that I really believe in the one, but that's not what we're talking about here. So we're just going to set that aside for now. But the early things, I'll list some things that I noticed in order that really made me be like, okay, this could be the person I've been searching for. Number one, this was the biggest thing for me, and it happened on our first date. I could really be myself with him. And let me backtrack a little bit. I think that I've always been a silly person. I make weird sounds, I make dumb jokes, I flail around like the inflatable things outside of car dealerships. I can be a really silly person. But for the longest time, I really kind of suppressed that silly side of me. And I would still unleash it when I was home alone by myself, but I was never silly with other people because I was afraid of looking stupid and, you know, being cringe and being weird and things like that. And I remember when I was dating the comedian, he would be kind of silly, but I couldn't be silly back with him. And I remember really thinking to myself, why can't I be my full self? And during that time I was single after the comedian and I broke up, one thing I would really think about is, I want to be with someone where I can be my full silly self. I want to be able to dance around weird in the kitchen and make weird sounds and do all these things. And why is it that I can't seem to show that side of myself to anyone, really? And on my first date with Ozzy, I was my full, complete self. I mean, I was making weird sounds. I was saying weird shit that made no sense, you know, not like really sharp, witty jokes, but just weird, dumb shit. And I showed this full side of myself that I had never really shown to anyone. And it was our first date. And that was a big thing for me, where it just made me want to be around him more and more and more. And then as we spent more time together, another thing that really hit for me was he would really listen and adapt his behavior when I voiced something to him. He really took accountability. I mean, I remember on the last thing I said, the listen and adapt, when it was New Year's Eve of 2020, so going into 2021, leading up to it, I remember talking to him about what he's doing. And he's like, well, I might be going to this thing, but I don't know if I can bring anyone. And I was like, okay, well, obviously you're not that into me if you don't want to spend New Year's Eve with me. And so he canceled the other thing and hung out with me. And that was a big thing where I was like, okay, I voiced that something bothered me and he changed his behavior. That's huge. He really would take accountability. I mean, I will never forget when we were early on into dating. This was before he went to Australia and we stopped talking and stuff. And then he came back and we actually got together. This was in that first stage. He was kind of talking to me about how he has to go back to Australia and it makes him nervous, and how the last time that he dated a girl here and then went back to Australia, she threw away his bike or set it on fire or something really crazy like that. I don't remember entirely what it was, but I will never forget the way that he talked about it, instead of being like, yeah, this crazy bitch set my bike on fire, which a bike is very metallic, so I'm guessing he didn't say on fire. That's just how I chose to remember it, because it's probably funnier to me. There's something about people setting shit on fire that I find really funny, and it's not a great look, because arson has killed a lot of people and a lot of things, and wasn't one of the, you know, massive fires in California or Australia recently actually started with arsonists? So I don't mean to laugh at arson, but for whatever reason, I find it so funny. Anyway, instead of being like, yeah, this crazy bitch set my bike on fire, he said something like, yeah, and then she set my bike on fire, threw it away or whatever. And listen, I'm sure it was my fault, blah, blah, blah. And he went on. And I was like, whoa, 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 whoa. The way that he took responsibility for her behavior when any other man would have been like, yeah, this crazy bitch did this. There is nothing more attractive than that. I fucking love it. And then he always just gave me a lot of grace, no matter what I did, no matter how I behaved, you know, behaviors that the comedian fully would end our relationship over and not speak to me anymore. He was really just always kind of chill and, you know, would let me be not perfect. I mean, I remember one time I was really just kind of moody and not being super pleasant. And I apologized to him and he said, you're fine. You don't have to be in a perfect mood all the time. So it was things like that. But honestly, there are little reminders every single day for me that we are a good match. I mean, I remember last week we had this full conversation about how, you know, how the blush episode titles have always been in all caps. For months now, I've been thinking, really since the podcast started, I've been thinking, oh, should they all be in all caps? It just feels like I'm yelling all the time. And so I had a full conversation with him about no longer doing them in all caps and got his feedback on it. And he really just partook in that conversation as though it was this very legit, serious thing, rather than being like, are you fucking kidding me? Are we really talking about capitalizing letters in your episode titles? So things like that. But I will never forget a few days ago, this was one of the I've never been so wet in my life, let me tell you. So I mentioned that we're both reading, right? By the way, I'm reading Verity. Shout out to my friend Alex who recommended it to me. It is the best fucking book. I'm already excited to get in bed tonight and read more of it. I'm so fucking obsessed with it. It's a Colleen Hoover book, but it's a bit of a thriller. I haven't read any of her other books, but I hear that it's not like her other books. Anyway, So he's reading this book about basketball. And this book was published 10 years ago. It's this huge book, and it's written by, I'm not going to say the author's name because I'm about to say a bunch of negative things about the book, but you can probably piece it together yourself if you're a sporty kind of person. It's written by someone who's really, really into sports, not a former player himself or anything. I think he came up as a sports writer, and he has a very massive sports podcast now. And so the other day I asked him how he's liking his book, and he said, you know, it's fine, but it's actually making me really angry and I just want to get through it and finish it. And I said, why is it making you angry? And he said, well, it's really misogynistic at times. It's really homophobic. The way that he speaks about people is just really not okay. And he read some examples of it out of the book for me. And it would be things like there was this footnote in one part of the book, and it's like, you know, this player is kind of like the brunette in a group of girlfriends. And then he goes on this long tangent where he's like, you know, every group of girls has this type of friend and this type of friend and this type of friend and this type of friend, you know, the hot one, the alcoholic but blonde hot one, the one with double D's, the fat one, the this one, that one. And then, and it goes on and on. I'm not going to keep going on with it because it actually was so problematic. And he read it to me and he's like, that's fucking disgusting. Like, you can't talk about women like that. And he read some other examples of things that he would say that really were homophobic, that really were extremely misogynistic, but also not to the level that every single person reading them would immediately, it wasn't like, I hate women and they're stupid. And it wasn't like, fuck gay people or something, you know, it was more these microaggressions that now in 2023 we're more aware of. But when the book was published in 2009, it went right through, you know, at no point where the publishers or editors like, oh, I don't think we should publish this, because it was totally fine. And I do think more and more people are aware of these things now, but I think a lot of straight men still aren't, still would read that and just chuckle and move right along, especially the type of guys who are going to be reading a book about basketball to begin with. But the fact that he flagged these things and noticed the misogyny and the homophobia and was so angered by it, I have never been more turned on in my life. When I tell you there was a full-on puddle inside of the bed, when I tell you I had to order a new mattress the next day because I destroyed that one because I was so fucking turned on by this man being angered by misogyny and homophobia, I've never loved him more. I've never fucking loved him more. We had the best sex of our lives right afterwards. Okay, but to bring it back, I do want to say one last thing about this. If I stopped being happy in this relationship at any point, I would leave. And that is what all of the trauma therapy I've done, that is what working through my attachment wounds has done for me. It's made me be a little more like, I don't know if there is quote unquote the one, because I do think that we're constantly growing and evolving and situations change. And I don't know that I believe in this fairy tale thing anymore, because I also know that no matter what, I'm always going to prioritize myself, at least until I have children. I'm always going to prioritize myself and my own well-being and my own happiness. And if something were to change in our dynamic and I wasn't happy anymore, I would leave eventually after trying to work on it. So I do want to just give that caveat. But yeah, I mean, the truth is we are really, really happy. And those were the things that I guess in order have set it off for me. Okay, so we're going to wrap up the episode. I just have one update from the last time we did a Q&A episode. So someone sent me an update and I want to play it here for you guys. I got her permission to play it.
Hi, Eva. So a couple things. The reason that I needed to DM you because I needed to ask about your mascara, but I realized that I wanted to give you an update because my question that you answered on the podcast a few months ago about like not being sure how you feel after a first date was super helpful, and that person that I went on a first date with is now my boyfriend, and it's still relatively new, but it's been really great and happy and stable, and I haven't felt that way in a while, so for now I'm just kind of going with it because it feels great. So thank you for that. I also just wanted to say that your podcasts have gotten me through law school finals, so that's another just thank you so much.
Okay, this made me so happy. And if you want, you can go back to the last Q&A episode. She asked a question about, it was actually kind of almost the opposite energy of the first question in today's Q&A episode, where she had a history of, I think, seeing people and not really being sure how she felt about it and cutting things off really quickly and not being sure if she's trying to convince herself to be into someone or not. And I gave her some advice, and now she's in a really happy relationship. So we love to hear it. We love to see our blush babies just moving on up in the world and just growing and evolving and being their best selves. And a reminder to you guys that you can leave voicemails for the podcast, and the link to do that is in the show notes. And if you do, you can hear yourself on the episode, which is kind of fucking cool. So do it. Okay, that's that. Thank you so much for joining me today. If you watched on video, you're welcome for all the arm work, and you're welcome for my left eye being a very prominent feature in this episode as it twitched all fucking episode long. If you know how to make it go away beyond managing stress and sleeping more, let a girl know, because it's starting to kind of drive me crazy. Okay, it is the end of the month, so I will be picking a giveaway winner tomorrow, so you're gonna want to enter into the giveaway, and if you're listening when it's already June, then you'll be entered into the June giveaway. But a reminder, if you leave a review for the podcast at the end of the month, I'm gonna pick a winner to get access to the Blush Academy. You'll get a 6-month membership where you can do all of the courses. And there's a brand new workbook in the Blush Academy. So if you're a member, go check that out. You can download it. It's an attachment styles workbook. It has daily journals. It has trigger journals. It's amazing. It's beautiful. I'm so fucking proud of it. It's the type of journaling that I actually do every day. And I think you're going to fucking love it, and it complements the courses so well. But there's other courses. There's courses on attachment styles, moving towards secure attachment, fight picking, breakups, decentering romance. There's a bunch of shit. And then there's seasonal stuff that comes up. I'm so proud of the Blush Academy. And, you know, you can always join via the link in the show notes. But you can also win a 6-month membership. Just leave a review, say how amazing the show is, and either leave your Instagram handle in the review or screenshot the review when you leave it and send it to me. Email it to theblushpod@gmail.com, and I will randomly select a winner at the end of every month to win a 6-month membership. So you don't want to miss out, guys. Love you guys. If you enjoyed this episode, if you took something from it, if you liked all my arm movements, if you liked my twitching eye, if you liked the sounds of my boyfriend going to the bathroom, if you enjoyed any of these things or the content itself, please, please, please leave a review. Even if not for the giveaway, leave a review because it helps the show. It takes a few seconds for you, but it helps the show so much. Share this episode, put it in your Instagram stories, share it with someone who you think would take something from it. You know the drill. Love you guys. Talk next week. Bye.